Prime Day is coming July 16th and 17th, with epic deals exclusively for Prime members. You'll feel like you just won an award.
Oh, wow, I didn't even prepare a speech. I'd like to thank my family for always needing stuff. Also, Sam, my delivery guy, for bringing all my awesome deals so fast. You're the man, Sam!
Shop deals on electronics, home, and more this Prime Day, July 16th and 17th.
Just like backyard barbecues or a day at the pool, the Three Rivers Festival has always been a part of our summer fun. And the festival returns July 12th to the 20th. It kicks off with the annual Three Rivers Festival Parade. Browse art in the park with local artisans. Bring the family to Children's Fest. Stroll through Junk Food Alley. And don't forget about the festival concerts at the Hoosier Lottery stage with live music from nationally renowned acts. You can buy your concert tickets or check out a schedule of events at threeriversfestival.org. Don't miss the best summer experience in Fort Wayne, the Three Rivers Festival.
Forbidden Door 2024 is in the books. We had some great matches, a new IWGP heavyweight champion, plus the announcement of a whole new interpromotional event taking place in Tokyo in January. We're going to break it all down right here with Jeremy Finestone. I'm Stephen Conway. This is Speaking of Strong Style. Welcome, everyone, to Speaking of Strong Style Post Forbidden Door 2024 edition. We're glad you're with us. Thank you for staying up late. It was if you're up early in some parts of the world, I know we have people watching and listening from all over, but we're grateful that you're here with us. It was a long show, Jeremy, 5.5 hours, but I felt like it went pretty well for the most part. We're going to talk about some of the ups and a couple of downs in this thing. In the end, though, we also found out that there's a whole new event coming in conjunction, with Wrestle Kingdom weekend. So now that we've gotten through this odyssey here, 5.5 hours of wrestling, how are you feeling overall? I mean, did you enjoy Forbidden Door 2024?
Here's the thing. Every year we go through the Forbidden Door thing and you express the frustration about what it isn't. And then the event actually gets here and you realize, yeah, actually was a pretty good show in all honesty. Had its ups, had its downs. Definitely had some performances that were worth forgetting. But on the whole, I had a great time watching the show and I thought that the major beats were it.
Well, we're going to go over every single match and things. In the end here, we did have a new IWGP World Heavyweight Champion. That was the main title switch. There was another one also involving the women. Of course, it was title versus title, Mercedes Moné. Now, both the TBS and NJPW Strong Women's Champion, that was the title she was supposed to have in the first place. Mm-hmm. The thing that struck me about that, and we're going to break down each match one by one. I came away for Forbidden Door thinking that Stephanie Vaquer kind of stole the show until the main event. I mean, the main event was fantastic. The main with Will Ospreay versus Swerve Strickland, really exciting match, fantastic stuff. Before that, she really won that crowd over in Long Island. Strong crowd, too. They sold a lot of tickets for this. I was happy to see it. And at the end, Mercedes, they didn't turn on her so much. By the end of that match, they were booing her. Part of that is the Boston connection. They're in Long Island, New York. And then part of it was that Stephanie Vaquer kind of won that group over.
I got the distinct sense that the audience knew that Mercedes was going to win this match. It just seemed like a foregone conclusion. Yeah. And when a match like that will happen, you know, they do everything in their power to put the person who's losing over. Or, you know, usually it's a challenger, but because it was a title versus title thing, it was a little bit of a different dynamic. This audience was not going to let Stephanie fail. They were willing her to just look like a star through this entire thing. And you know what? She didn't need any help. She was on it tonight. She knew it was a big deal for her, much like a few other wrestlers did. And I just thought she completely delivered. And ever since Resurgence last year, where she was in that tournament and she kind of showed out against Mercedes in the first place, you know, she's just been one to watch. And this was a night where it's like, if you've been watching, you were rewarded. And kind of reminded me of Mercedes when she was Sasha Banks in WWE and had kind of those coming out matches and they were cheering for her when she wasn't supposed to be the person being cheered. So I kind of think it's a little funny that that ended up being a scenario that Mercedes understood and was fully compliant and just going along with it.
So about 10,000 tickets distributed from this one. I'm just looking that up on the WrestleTix feed there. And the setup was for 11,008, so very strong crowd. And I was happy to see that. And Sam is here. Hello, Sam from Power of Bombshells. I'm glad you're here. Yes, I'm out of the fetal position. I said on the show on Power Bombshells that I was trying to manifest Jeff Cobb versus Samoa Joe somehow. And they managed to stick a bunch of other people in there that didn't need to be there. You know how some meetings could be emails, some matches can be dynamites. Just saying.
Yes.
But I tried to manifest
Samoa Joe. It right out of my mouth.
And I was trying to manifest Samoa Joe and Jeff Cobb. It didn't quite happen.
You know, I was looking at the schedules, you know, this and that. There's a couple of windows where if they really wanted to make that happen on a Dynamite, it could happen. But yeah. It should have happened here.
Yeah, we'll get something. I think we're going to get something Wednesday because Jeff doesn't have to be back in Japan for these two shows this week. Mm-hmm. He's not scheduled for them. So USVA guy is here. Glad to see you. Glad you're here live with us. Very cool. This main event, Jeremy, why don't we go ahead and start with this? We're going to start with the main event. We're going to work our way backwards. And Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay, we knew it was going to be good. The crowd was ready for this one. And while Moxley and Naito kind of put him to sleep for a little while there, they came back up for this. As soon as the bell rang, people were into this one. There was a lot of crowd reaction just for the beginning of the match. And then once they started wrestling, it was terrific. And these two have worked each other before. It's been very exciting. A couple of things here, highlights, and I'm not going to list off a whole bunch of move for move things. That's not what these little wrap-up shows are really for, but Swerve jumping from the top rope turnbuckle to the announce desk for a swerve stop was pretty spectacular. And you knew these guys were going to do a lot of spectacular things. But, man, that was just such an athletic moment right there. And the table did them absolutely no favors, just standing up hard right there. That table was not.
How about the wherewithal of Ospreay to do that little hop so that his body was in just the right position to turn instead of actually crumbling against the corner of the announce table? I watched it a couple of times. You could see it afterwards. You're just like, these people have amazing control over their bodies.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then later on, they started hitting each other's moves. So they did Swerve kicked out of the Ass Cutter and the Stormbreaker. So all these moves that they've been working very hard to protect, they threw the kitchen sink at it here, and they've kicked out of a few. So Stormbreaker's been very well protected in both AEW and in New Japan, but he kicked out of the Ass Cutter Stormbreaker combination. Swerve hit a hidden blade himself. Referee Paul Turner got knocked out, which added a little drama where Don Callis tried to get Ospreay to use the screwdriver, and he thought about it. He thought about it for a second, but Will's better nature got hold of him. He threw the screwdriver away. And after that, though, he walked into the big kick from Swerve. And after that, Swerve just started hitting move after move after move. Now, when he hit the swerve stop, Aubrey Edwards came in for Paul Turner.
Right.
Counted two, and Will kicked out of that, and that got an enormous pop from the crowd. So they had him eating out of the palm of their hand here.
Yes.
But in the end, it basically took every single move that Swerve had, every finisher he had, and he gives Will Ospreay his first AEW loss there. And Swerve, still the champion, but a tremendous match, very much worth going out of your way to see. Both of them should be proud of the performance, I felt.
This was a fantastic match. There was a very real possibility that Swerve was going to not look as strong as he could coming out of this match, even though it seemed to be a foregone conclusion that he was going to win it. You know, Will Ospreay is such a star, and you have to be mindful of one of them is the champion and one of them is the challenger for the main title. Will has a ton of momentum. Swerve also has a ton of momentum, but when I was going into this match, I was worried that Swerve could lose something by winning because Ospreay looked so strong in the way that he lost. But they did something really interesting, and it's kind of flipped from his time when he was in New Japan, because near the end of his run, he was so dominant and he was frequently in the Swerve position of being the world beater, and the people couldn't make it through the end of his matches, and they were almost mercy killings by the end of it. And so now Will is in that position of having to just kind of put him out of his misery rather than, you know, getting screwed, getting like blindsided and then losing clean, but there was another reason. You know, he lost this match. You know, he got distracted by the screwdriver, but Swerve was the champion tonight, and he retained, and he looked like the champion all the way through. You know, we talk about there's going to be the long hero's journey, the Campbell journey for Ospreay that's going to last a year because he's never really had it before, and this is the right time to do it. We're going to find out whether this is the right play for Will Ospreay. But for one night, for one match, I think the match hit what it needed to do, and I think it accomplished all the goals it set up to do. What do you think?
Yeah, I liked it. And they had some flexibility because Ospreay is the international champion. So you're going into this big show at Wembley Stadium. It's kind of the next one of the next big things. And you're going to need Will to be a big part of that. I think that it would have thrown the result of this match up in the air a little bit if Will weren't the international champion. He's like, well, he's going to be in a big match at Wembley. Mm-hmm. But he had the international title. He could lose this one, still be in a major match at Wembley of some kind. And it could be for the international title, and it'll still mean a hell of a lot. And they have not announced a single match for that thing, and they've sold 40,000 tickets. Last year they sold a lot more because of the novelty of it. But still, I'm just going to say this, without a match announced, 40,000 tickets have been sold. Once those matches start coming, I'd imagine that crowd is going to grow even more right there, and Will has to be a big part of that. So this match did not hurt him. He still looks like one of the best in the world. He's still a champion. Swerve looks better for having dealt him his first AEW loss. I think everybody came out of this just fine, and they have a world champion right now, and you saw the reaction at the end of this throughout the match and then at the end of the match. That crowd takes Swerve very seriously as champion, as they should. There's no reason they shouldn't. But this is another match that just shows this guy plays at an extraordinarily high level.
I believe that this match, this title defense by Swerve, is the most dominant title defense by any defending champion in AEW, probably since MJF defended against Kenny Omega back in November of last year. And it's possible, you know, there were even other matches going back to Danielson, but it's rare that you are given a champion and he legitimately beats the best challenger on the roster so cleanly and so dominantly that you look at him differently now. You know what I mean? Like, how many times are we getting AEW champions that are fighting like the fifth best guy on the roster because all the other top guys are feuding with each other? Okay. And now you had Will Ospreay, who hasn't even lost a match yet until tonight. And Swerve just beat him so cleanly that now you have to look at Swerve escalated even more than he was before. So if you looked at him like, well, he hasn't really beaten all the top guys. Oh, he beat a top guy tonight. You know, he beat one of the best.
They did protect Will a little bit while the referee was out. Will hit Hidden Blade and covered Swerve, but there was nobody there to count the pin. So that was a traditional pro wrestling protect move there. They just made sure that Will wasn't. The Will has some argument to make anyway, coming out of it. And at least the fans got the visual pin out there for Ospreay. So always a classic right there. A referee knocked out. As soon as he was knocked out, you know, well, Will's hitting something big here in a second. So
I have a question for you here. Now we're looking towards the future. At All In, who do you see Swerve wrestling and who do you see Will Ospreay wrestling?
It seems like they made a point of showing MJF watching the monitor during this match. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be the direction they're headed in that sense. I'm not sure why. Yeah, I suppose it would have to be that. Again, MJF can't go after the guy he needs to be going after for health reasons. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't quite pan out. And it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense for MJF to be doing anything except trying to tear Adam Cole's life in half. But in the meantime, I suppose he's going to challenge you. They showed he stayed. Believe me, MJF had all kinds of time. He could have been home on his couch. He could have already watched the Olympic trials by the time that main event hit the ring because it was such a long show, and he let off the pay-per-view. But no, he was still in the arena. He was still standing there watching the monitor.
Very interested in the main event.
So, yeah, very interested in the main event, and I don't think that was a coincidence. That's probably where they're going next.
So I kind of wondered if he was going to show up at the main event in some way, shape, or form. It ended up being Callis, Don Callis, instead. That kind of leaves it in the air that he might show up for the Daniel Garcia Will Ospreay match on Dynamite, and that could be the pathway in which we get Will Ospreay and MJF, because, you know, that whole subplot hasn't disappeared. And then, you know, we might get Hangman, and it could be Brian Danielson against Swerve Strickland. I personally wouldn't be, I wouldn't have a problem with either one, but I do think in both situations, it'd probably be for the best that Swerve lost that match.
Okay. Well, you know, they're going to go into the winner of the Owen Hart tournament gets the Wembley shot, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So that feels like Danielson right now. Mm-hmm. We don't know who the wild card is. That could change things, blah, blah, blah. But they also have to do something big for the Arthur Ashe Stadium and things. So there are other matches to come besides just that. So they need a couple of people getting warmed up for this.
I do not know if you watched Collision, but they did drop a Hangman Page vignette and kind of circled towards Swerve. And there are a number of hints that were dropped that if you wanted to look at them separately, you'd come to a conclusion. But if you put them all together, it heavily suggests Hangman is the wild card in the Owen Hart Cup. All right, shall we move on to the next one?
Let's move on to the next one. There's no getting around it, is there? Nope. So the one before this one was the IWGP World Heavyweight title match. It was Jon Moxley, the champion, going in against Tetsuya Naito. And I don't know what else to say except this match didn't quite work. It was not a total disaster. I'm not trying to say it was a wreck. But this did not click. And we just saw this in Chicago, Windy City Riot. That was a much better match, the one that Moxley won. And, you know, what we saw here is Naito hit a Destino, early. He then went for the full Destino. You know, he'll do that thing where he counters a move into a Destino.
Right.
And you think, oh, okay. And then he lines the whole thing up, twists the arm, grabs the guy, does, you know, the equivalent of the three punches and the big leg before the big boot before the leg drop, right? And he has to kind of wind up. And when he winds up and hits the Destino, it's death. But, you know, they did that. But he went for the full Destino, and Moxley ended up hitting the paradigm shift out of it. And that was only about 15 minutes into the match. I thought, oh, okay, we're doing this a little bit quicker than I thought. I was ready for a longer match. It was probably a good thing they didn't. There was a Death Rider again for two. Moxley teased that he was going to use a chair, but Red Shoes took it away from him. And then it just got weird and clunky late. It's like they weren't sure what the other person was calling in the ring. And I noticed this, Jeremy, here, that we had all these preview tags leading up to this match, not with Moxley because he wasn't in Japan, but Naito was working House of Torture and everything. And in those matches, you don't get a lot of effort out of Naito. He saves his body for the big ones. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, keeps the shirt on, the classic thing. And I did notice a few times that he just isn't posting on things the way he normally does. And I just thought, well, he's taking it easy in these matches. But he wasn't doing it here either. So when he had to brace himself on the top rope, he was very shaky. When the Destino was a move that takes a lot of cooperation. So he basically grabs a hold of the guy's arm and kind of pulls himself up and around. But the other guy has to kind of post and hold him there. It seems like Naito's putting too much weight, like he can't do it. And the other guy has to kind of muscle him over now. There are a couple other moments when Naito has to post and he can't. I wonder if his knees or his back or something isn't a lot more hurt than he's letting on, because there were a few moments in this match where it just seemed like Naito's body couldn't quite complete the move the way, couldn't quite get all the way over or through it.
So there was a moment later on in the match where Moxley fell to the outside and then Naito crawled out around the steps and he was kind of stalking Moxley before he was gonna like tackle him. And the weirdest thing happened is that he almost tackled him between the announcer booth and the side of the barricade. Yeah. So he fell down in between, and it's almost as if he was supposed to go over the side of the little like barricade, and he didn't, and everybody seemed really confused. And I wondered when you were talking about it if that was kind of what you were getting at, is that like he just wasn't right tonight.
And that whole thing when he shoved Moxley off the top rope all the way to the floor, I don't think that was supposed to happen. I think he just fell off the ropes and then they had to improvise something.
I think so.
I wonder if he's more banged up. He didn't look good. Naito didn't look good. Like I said, they started hitting the big moves a little earlier than I thought. Some of that might have been for time. It's pay-per-view window. You got to get out of there by 11. But they hit that time exactly. It just felt like, first of all, they went faster than I thought toward the finish. And even then, the match was slow paced. There were a lot of slow moments in this match. Something wasn't clicking tonight between two guys who do know how to work one another.
I cringe when I say this, but I feel like the best way that I can describe this match was that it was contractually obligated. You know, it was just like, this match needed to happen, and the title change needed to happen. No one was particularly enthusiastic about what they were doing tonight. It just seemed like a night in the office. The ideas and the imagination at the start of this run just kind of petered out due to the realities of the politics of how it all just kind of seemed to be. And I enjoyed parts of all of this, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I am glad that Naito has the title again. I'm glad that we can focus on New Japan-centric top-to-bottom stories. I'm glad Moxley had a run and can kind of be in that echelon of, you know, IWGP champions. But I'm ready to move on. And this is, like, forgettable and not in a, like, I want to burn it down and we need to make fun of it over and over again, but it just kind of, like, it didn't work, and it'll move on to something that does.
Prime Day is coming July 16th and 17th, with epic deals exclusively for Prime members. You'll feel like you just won an award.
Oh, wow, I didn't even prepare a speech. I'd like to thank my family for always needing stuff. Also Sam, my delivery guy, for bringing all my awesome deals so fast. You're the man, Sam!
Shop deals on electronics, home, and more this Prime Day, July 16th and 17th.
Just like backyard barbecues or a day at the pool, the Three Rivers Festival has always been a part of our summer fun. And the festival returns July 12th to the 20th. It kicks off with the annual Three Rivers Festival Parade. Browse art in the park with local artisans. Bring the family to Children's Fest. Stroll through Junk Food Alley. And don't forget about the festival concerts at the Hoosier Lottery stage with live music from nationally renowned acts. You can buy your concert tickets or check out a schedule of events at threeriversfestival.org. Don't miss the best summer experience in Fort Wayne, the Three Rivers Festival.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
Yeah, we've seen a better version of this match, basically, is the thing. And he ended up hitting a Destino. It did not have an epic finish, really. They did some near falls. But in the end, Naito just kind of hit a brain buster and then hit the full Destino to win. So after that, we moved on to the main event from there, which was a nice palate cleanser, because after that one didn't quite work, you did get one that absolutely did to finish off the night. So that was good. Now, before that, we got word about a new event from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Jeremy, that was where this tucked in. It was just before the Naito Moxley match. Wrestle Kingdom is every January 4th. They have added a second night. Now, they've done this before, but it was two-night Wrestle Kingdom. Well, now, the second night is a new event and kind of a different thing. They're calling this Wrestle Dynasty, and right there in the logo, Jeremy, you see the CMLL logo, AEW, Ring of Honor, and Stardom all in there, and it looks like it's basically Forbidden Door Japan. Now, we're going to have all these interpromotional matches taking place. So we'll have Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th, January 5th, still in the Dome, this new event. So another pretty ambitious move, trying to fill a baseball stadium in 2 days in a row, but with a separate concept. So instead of a two-day kingdom, the second night, going to be seeing a lot of guests.
I'm really upset I'm not going.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I saw this, I'm like, hot damn, they're actually doing it. And yeah. It really, you know, you already have CMLL participation. There's going to be more Stardom participation. They were just folded in properly into the New Japan company a couple of days ago. When you see this icon, really the big deal is AEW and New Japan are doing a show together at the Tokyo Dome the night after Wrestle Kingdom. The and rest CMLL. Of it is...
Don't forget CMLLs in there.
Yes, the CML, but CMLL has already participated like in the New Japan, like ecosphere for a while. This is the first, like, the big AEW debut into the thing, is what I'm trying to because Stardom has been there, and they've been Stardom and the CMLL participation in New Japan has already existed. This is the first bell of the ball AEW Ring of Honor, and it's exciting, you know. It's like, I want to see more of this. I want to see, you know, I want to see the AEW roster in the Japanese culture of wrestling. You know, like, we have seen these Japanese wrestlers, you know, in the American culture, and sometimes it's hitting really well, sometimes it's not. But when they go to Japan and they do a tour, or they do a night, or they do this, it's fun. You know, like, you see a different side of them, and I am here for that.
Yeah, and of course they've had plenty of AEW guys come in as guests that have done runs and participated in tournaments and things, but this would be a different type of concept, I think, here, just a big kind of super show like that. So we'll see what they do with it. Obviously nothing announced at all for it, of course, but we still have a long way to go toward that, but we'll be keeping an eye on it. Now,
excited for this. And, you know, you can extend your birthday celebration just a little bit longer for a couple
of days. Yeah, I guess so. It kills me that I'm not going there. And we're going to Japan in 2025. I'll be there for a couple of weeks sometime in 2025. But we'll have to see when. We're trying to iron all that out. After that, we will have, maybe I'll do a show from there. Maybe I'll just get up in the middle of the morning.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it would be cool. Okay. So before that, we had title for title, TBS title versus the NJPW Strong title. So Mercedes Moné, the TBS champion, wrestling Stephanie Vaquer, the women's champion, the NJPW Strong women's champion. She has a title in CMLL. She has another, she had three belts coming down to the ring, because just about everybody that she works with realizes how good she is and puts a belt on her. Ridiculously talented. And I tell you what, she really showed up in this one. She was definitely motivated. Everything she hit was clean and crisp. Mercedes had a couple of moments, but for the most part was right there with her. And Vaquer won over the crowd during a really good match. And they were split, and there were still plenty of CEO chants, you know, but they were kind of getting on Mercedes' case at the end. Part of that was probably, like I said, the Boston connection, and she's on Long Island. But there was a nice sequence into a moneymaker and crossface there at the end for the win. And then, you know, this was a match that we kind of had an idea of who was going to win, like you mentioned. This is a course correction. Mercedes was supposed to get the NJPW Strong belt in the first place, win the tournament to create the champion. She got hurt, and they had to call an audible. So Stephanie did a wonderful job establishing that title as something special and having really good matches with it. And she's a made woman in my book as far as coming into New Japan, even AEW down the road. I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of her on both Japanese, U.S., certainly in Arena Mexico. Just a big, big star. Terrific performance from her and putting over Mercedes. But that's where it needs to be. I mean, considering how much of a star Mercedes is, considering how much, and I don't know, I'm assuming that Tony's paying her quite a bit. This is the right spot for her. You want her headlining some of these shows in North America.
I think that Stephanie Vaquer made herself a ton of money tonight. In all honesty, like, this was a shout out to the entire world of wrestling that I am worth every penny that you want to pay me, whatever promotion that I'm at. I don't know if AEW is the best fit for her, or if she could really break through in WWE. You know, she's gotta, her promos have gotta, you know, she's gotta be able to be clear and communicate with the audience, but her potential is unbelievable. And when Mercedes is in the ring with somebody that she can make as a star, you know, she loved doing it with Bianca, she did it with Bayley, she's done it many, many times before. That's where she shines, you know, is when she makes the magic. And this is one of those matches where, you know, she went along with the crowd. The crowd wanted to boo her at times. She's like, fine, you can boo me. I'll do whatever.
She's a pro. She knows how to handle that. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. So I was charmed by this match, I think is the best way to put it. It was divine, and I would recommend it to anyone who just says, hey, tell me a good women's wrestling match in AEW. a conversation that I had many times this past week about the quality and caliber. This is one of those matches like, yeah, you point at this and say, this is what we're talking about.
All right. And we're going to talk a little bit about that show again on January 5th because we have some information here. USVA guy, of course, is in with the office, so he knows. And then we were asking, so usually New Year's Dash is right after Wrestle Kingdom. Now, when they've done a two-night Wrestle Kingdom, they've done New Year's Dash in the next day or two after that. And it looks like that is still happening. So
it's going to happen on my birthday now.
Yeah, maybe so. So Dash is still scheduled to happen after Wrestle Dynasty. So thanks to Sam and USVA guy kind of clarified all that for us in the chat. Wanted to make sure everybody that's not looking at the chat or listening as a podcast know that. So this is not replacing New Year's Dash. We're still going to have Dash. I'm hoping that Stardom continues their thing of doing something in Tokyo Dome City Hall the afternoon of Kingdom like they did last year. And so there's a big Stardom show. Then you walk over to the dome, just do a whole festival. So we'll see. And he says, I just hope the office doesn't get overwhelmed with their scheduling. That whole week with scheduling with Stardom and NJPW is going to be rough. It's going to be busy. It's going to be busy. A little festival in Tokyo. It'll be fun. So, yeah, we've got all these matches. And so now Mercedes Moné is ready to have a big match at Capital Collision. Which is already selling fairly well. You know, she can headline those kind of NJPW strong shows over here. And, of course, she's a big star with AEW, so they're in a good spot with that. Before that, we had the TNT title ladder match. So we knew this one was going to be a spot fest. You just had to look at the roster and know that, and know that it's a ladder match for a belt, and that's how these things work. But here are the participants, in case you were wondering if it was going to be a spot fest or not. El Fantasmo from New Japan, Dante Martin, Konosuke Takeshita, who will be in the G1 later on this summer, Leo Rush, Jack Perry, Mark Briscoe. Wow. Okay, so a lot to unpack in this one. Again, this is too many stunts to just go and describe them out here. But it was a very entertaining match, and I think everybody came through it mostly unscathed. I think the star for me, Jeremy, was Mark Briscoe, who knows how to do this stuff and is a veteran. But boy, he was exciting in this. Seems like every time he set something up or dove over something onto something else, it looked pretty good, or at least looked like guys that are trying to fight in this. And it didn't seem overly produced. It just looked like a really good ladder match spot. I ended up enjoying this one, and too much stuff going on, but the Blue Thunder Bomb from Takeshita to El Fantasmo off the apron through two tables looked pretty incredible. There was once when Briscoe jumped off the ladder onto Perry and came up short and didn't break the table. That looked like it hurt. But there was another one. He did a dive over on top of someone. I don't even remember who was laying on the ladders on the outside when they were in a ladder sandwich or a ladder table sandwich, crashed through the whole thing. So it was a car crash match like you would expect. In the end, Perry, of course, the Elite, had a strong night tonight as they try to build up that heel faction. He wore out Briscoe with ladder shots and chairs, climbed the ladder, got the title. It felt like this is as much in service to the whole Elite storyline as anything else, that they're trying to get these guys a lot of momentum as a heel faction, and this was servicing that. I know a lot of people hoped that Takeshita would win or a sentimental thing for Briscoe, but they're telling a story here with the Elite, and Perry winning this title is an important part of it.
I thought this match was great after I unclenched my butthole and realized that nobody was seriously hurt. And yeah, that's basically my standard of operation with the ladder matches now. You know, yeah. Like they played with the Dante Martin hurting his leg, and they'd had great blocking with the camera after Takeshita got squashed through the table by Briscoe between the ladder and the table. Oh, he rolled out of the way, and then he was gone for like 5 minutes, and it was enough time where I was legitimately concerned that he was really hurt, and they did a really great job with that. I don't like being toyed with my emotions and people's health during a ladder match. Don't love it, but I did have a very good time watching him when all was said and done. Glad everybody's safe. Please keep ladder matches rare, few in between, maybe two a year. I can live with that between Ring of Honor and AEW. New Japan never does ladder matches, so it's not a big deal over there. You know, like
unfortunately, we've been stuck with a couple of them recently.
Yeah, but not like this.
Not like this.
Not like this. This was good. The right person won. I think the issue with the match was Jack Perry was already booked far and away a bigger star as all the other people in this match. Mm-hmm. That it would have been a surprise had he not won, rather had he won, if that makes any sense. You know,
the fans are ready for Takeshita, though, aren't they? They're about to lose him for a month because he's going to go and wrestle in the G1. Mm-hmm. But I think the AEW fans are ready for something with Takeshita. They were there. I mean, he's had a lot of terrific matches. I think they might be ready for something more from him before too much.
Well, they ought to check in on the G1 because I have a feeling he is going to show out when it comes to the G1 schedule all the way through and maybe even make it into some post block play with the way that they got that thing set up. He's poised for a big, big couple of months, I think.
And El Fantasmo broke my heart. And literally, because he did, you know, instead of the heart symbol with your hands, he had the broken mm-hmm. one because he's lost his teammates and things. Yes. Hikaleo is gone and Tamatanga is gone.
He was a curious case through this entire week. So they taped the Rampage last week with some stuff, and then they did the Collision taped on top of Dynamite. And Fantasmo had an entry match into this in which he was booked through the entire like scenario as a heel, but he was very clearly a babyface against AR Fox trying to qualify for this match. Yeah. And then he was booked alongside the heels on Collision last night, but he was still somewhat babyface. So there was this really confusing, like, we need you to be in this position, but we understand that you're just going to do whatever you're good at.
This does go to our theory that Tony Khan hasn't actually watched New Japan in 4 years and doesn't know who's babyface and who's heel. Like most of his booking this week is like Tony still thinks it's 2020, 18, someone in there. So,
you know, I speak it into existence and I get burned right away.
Oh, geez. Look at that. So this is from Sam from Power Bombshells is giving us an update. It says Beyond Wrestling tweeted that Leo Rush is hurt and pulled out of their American Rana show. Dang it all. It's always somebody, isn't it? And then Lady B says, I became a fan of Stephanie tonight. Great showing. Yeah, it really was.
Remember the Fight Game Media family joined in on the Power Bombshells and now part of cool. Discord. You can Fantastic. Email gg@fightgamemedia.com if you want in on Discord action, where we talk about all these shows and all the shows that we do, like Speaking Strong Style, which airs every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern at our normal time, talking all things New Japan. And when you listen to this podcast, be sure to check us out there. Sam and Mel, who are in our chat right now, are part of the Power Bomb Show, who had a pre-show this morning or this afternoon, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern every Sunday. And they'll be back next Sunday to talk more wrestling to your heart's desire. And these are all the plugs that we wanted to talk to you about on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel. So give us the thumbs up, the likes, the shares, the subscribes, please and thank you. And we will get back to this this glorious ladder match.
I mentioned before that the one before this one, that's pretty much what we had to say about that one. I hope that Leo recovers quickly and things. But before that, we had the match. I mentioned that some meetings can be emails and some matches can be dynamites. This match could have been on Dynamite. It was Hook, Samoa Joe, and Katsuyori Shibata against NJPW TV champion Jeff Cobb, Chris Jericho, and Big Bill. Oh, my goodness. Be still my beating heart. And this was a match that was really frustrating. So what I wanted was Samoa Joe versus Jeff Cobb for the TV title. Cobb had been doing this.
I think we all wanted that. I think
doing this angle where he's calling out everybody. He says, I got an open challenge to anybody in AEW. And exactly zero people signed up for it, apparently. And he gets stuck in a six-man match with Chris Jericho and Big Bill. And it was... There were some teases, and that is true. We did get a couple of little teasers of Samoa Joe and Jeff Cobb to the point, and that was what everybody popped for. There was a little bit with Shibata. The rest of this really didn't need to be here at all, and it just felt like a time filler. And I guess they feel like, because Chris Jericho feels like he invented this, just ask him, but Chris Jericho thinks he invented everything, because he made a phone call or something and had a match with Tanahashi, he invented this whole spirit of cooperation, and he'll be the first to tell you about it. And so I guess you feel like you've got to put Chris on the show. I guess they just feel like they owe it to Chris. We got it. We got to have Chris on this show. So Chris was out there stumbling around, waving, and, you know, I guess we're all still doing the thing where we pretend Chris is still good, right? We're still doing that. I don't know. What's there?
Tony Khan went up to Chris Jericho and said, "Hey, listen, we have this idea of doing a TV title match of Jeff Cobb versus Samoa Joe, but it would mean that you're not on this. You're not on this show, Chris. Are you okay with that?" And he says, "Hey, guys, that doesn't work for me, brother."
Oh, God.
And that's why we have this match.
Well, who else we got? Taz's kid is listening over here in the corner. Man. Why don't we put him in?
This match is fine. This match is what Chris Jericho is going to point to and say, "See, I do job for the younger guys by taking the finisher, his own finisher from Hook." But this was a dynamite match, yeah, right? This was to set up maybe Hook or Joe versus Cobb at the pay-per-view. Like, you could have done this on Dynamite on Wednesday or Collision, set up Cobb versus Joe, and we would have had a 15-minute meat match that goes to a draw, and yes, the world would have rejoiced.
Yes. If you had had a really good match between Cobb and Joe that goes to the time limit, everyone would have loved it. And instead we got something like this. And I know they can say they come out of this and now Hook has a title shot at the FTW title that no one cares about. No one ever did care about, but it's still just sitting there. So anyway,
it is more important to make sure that Chris Jericho has a match on this card instead of having a pay-per-view that down the line people say, "You know what, that was a really special big man match between those two guys that only got to happen once in a while. Cool, that's great." But you're not going to remember it the way you're going to remember it if it's on an episode of Dynamite than you will that it happened like on a match on Forbidden Door.
Sam unloaded the dishwasher for most of this match, and I probably would have been more entertained by that. Moving on. Now, this one was entertaining. We had the AEW Women's title match between Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. Now,
Look at that one, or
you know what? Wait, you know what? I missed one. It's Orange Cassidy and Zach, wasn't it?
Which one of us got it wrong?
No, it's me. Orange Cassidy, Zach Sabre Jr. So, very entertaining mind games early in this one. Just the way they worked this match, where they were kind of taunting each other. You know, Zach almost inviting him to put his hands in his pocket. Come on, yeah, go ahead. And then Zach out wrestling him at first, and then Orange kind of making his comeback and getting some shots in on Zach, mostly strikes and things like that. And they worked in and out of holds early. And unfortunately, that made the announcers kind of goof off and joke around a little bit too much. There was a good match going on in the ring, but they just got totally sidetracked, the guys. And I had this theory, Jeremy, that I texted you during the show, that a good rule of thumb is don't have more people on commentary than there are in the ring. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately they were outnumbered 4-3 basically at that point with the referee. And it was just too much kind of not bickering, but just inside jokes and teasing each other. Meanwhile, a good match is going on. And this happens in AEW sometimes when they get that army of people sitting at commentary that they start just kind of trying to crack each other up and they forget to be wrestling announcers. And that's what happened here.
I just don't think it was their kind of match, and they couldn't keep up with the various submissions and maneuvers and the counters. And it was easier for them to make light of it and pop themselves in order to entertain the crowd rather than be able to keep up and entertain them properly. I thought that was a big miss in this match and probably its biggest flaw, because it wasn't the flaw of the work of the match.
And they started paying more attention when Orange started working Zach's knee, which Orange did really well, came up with a lot of different ways to work Zach's knee. And the crowd didn't really want to see either guy lose, which is my theory a little bit as to why it got kind of quiet sometimes in there. I don't think that the crowd was really cheering against anyone, but they were popping for the big move, so I think they were enjoying the match. But it was a matter of neither one of them was a guy they were just going to boo the hell out of or get behind the other one. They wanted to see Zach do his stuff. They wanted to see Orange do his stuff. When they hit their key spots, you know, when Orange stuck his hands in his pocket and did the bridge type of pin during the pin scramble, you know, that got a reaction out of people and things. But it was fun, and it did have the ending that it should have had in this one. There was a mousetrap into the Jujikatami, and then Zach tied up Orange in about five different kinds of knots at one time and got the submission. But we talked
You know what that submission was like? So he had him in the basic submission, and then he was methodically removing his limbs from accessibility to even move. And it was almost like a spider catching a fly in a web and just like bundling them up even more and more so that they could not move and were completely immobile. It was almost like the Sonata, you know, his little trap thing that he does. You know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. The Paradise Lock. But it's 1,000 times more complex and devastating than the Paradise Lock going ever look.
And of course, Orange is going through something similar to El Fantasma, where his friends keep leaving him. Although in Cassie's case, they're not going off to a main event angle in WWE; they're just turning on him, which is even worse somehow. But he's lost all of his buddies, and so this is just another thing where he can have a good match, lose. It's part of the story of him kind of hitting rock bottom before he will start to build himself back up, and so it all works to serve the overall story as well, and gives Zach a little bit more momentum heading into G1 season.
The beginning of the match where Cassidy was trying to emote that he was lacking a little bit of the confidence that he usually has, I felt like the audience didn't quite get it or wasn't receptive to it because they just wanted both of the guys at the top of their game to wrestle each other. But once that like they got past that story to kind of established it for the TV audience, I think the crowd ate it all up.
All right. Before that, we did have the AEW women's title. That's where this one was. Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa. So this is the Mariah May Bowl. This is the battle between Mariah's two mentors, Mariah and Mina. They did a good job, by the way, kind of explaining all that, I thought, in the video packages and in some of the commentary of how Mariah and Mina were tag team champions in Stardom, and they were like sisters. And then she has this weird relationship with Toni Storm that has all kinds of different layers to it in AEW. And so poor Mariah just doesn't know which way to turn as her mentors battle it out. Mariah was in the ring doing the Japanese tradition of giving flowers to both. That's something they used to do in All Japan Women all the time, is that the main event, they'd be presented with flowers. Mina worked on Tony's right knee. And for the first bit of the match, it was all Mina Shirakawa. I mean, Toni sold and sold and sold and sold at the beginning of this one. She hit a DDT off the top rope on Toni. But Toni did rally and had a release German hip attack. That hip attack has always looked so devastating. Mina hit the glamorous driver for two. That was one of her finishers. And Toni ended up kicking out, rallied, hit the pile driver to win. Mariah did not play a part in it. Everyone was kind of wondering, is this going to be when she does a turn? Is she going to pick one or the other? She just looked worried the whole match out there. But it was a really good match. I thought they had a terrific match. I thought they worked well together. Toni, which they also did a good job of mentioning, has been a champion in Stardom many times over. And I believe, I might just embarrass myself here, I believe she won the 5-star Grand Prix one year. Someone will scream at me in the chat if I'm wrong.
Listen, I gotta tell Matt and AEW 2019, both on Reddit and the YouTube chat, that I have to take the L from our episode last week where I said that Taven won the title in the main event.
Yeah, we had that back.
Supercard, and I got that one wrong. And I'm a man that's fair and true, and I had to take it. You guys had me. Thank you for correcting me. I just wanted to throw that out there. So if you get this wrong, it'll be okay. We'll just admit it later on.
I just looked it up. Toni won in 2017. All right, nailed it. Yeah, thank goodness. All right, either way, though, a really good match. It needed to be a retention. I mean, Mina's not going to be the AEW Women's Champion. And I think everybody knew that while the match was going on, but they ended up enjoying the match. And Mina did a hell of a good job here. She's really charismatic. She's a lot of fun in the ring. She's an excellent wrestler. Toni works well with her, knows how to work that Joshi wrestling style. I enjoyed the heck out of it. And then, you know, afterwards, it was all sportsmanship and hugs and kisses, and they all went off together happily. My theory on this one remains, Jeremy, that this whole thing is that Mariah is still with Toni, and she's going to move, and then the winner of the Owen Hart tournament gets the title shot in England. And so we had an Australian woman here in Toni Storm, a British woman in Mariah May. We're heading toward Wembley Stadium, and now we're going to ratchet up the tension as Mariah May advances through this Owen Hart tournament and might have to wrestle Toni now, not just sit in her corner or maybe choose the other person. Now they might have to wrestle. And I think that's where they're going with this. And I see Lady B as hints at it as well. She said, Tony, Mina, and Mariah were all in the scrum together. They lived happily ever after. There are also a couple of little vids on social media that indicates that they're having a very good night.
They teetered on creeping on the whole angle at the very end after the thruple kiss, when you just had a bunch of dudes doing the yes, yes, yes to the whole thing. In the front row, I'm just like, oh, man. You could have just let that one go, guys. You could have just let that one go. So here's the thing. Toni Storm has been working really, really hard as the AEW Women's Champion.
Oh, God,
yeah. But this was the best performance she's had in I don't know how long. This was her best showing. I think, well, I was talking to somebody about it. I was like, it reminded me of how hard she worked in the Fred Rosser, Juice Robinson match in New Japan last year at Resurgent, where she came in as like the third person in the match, just wrestled like crazy throughout the whole thing. And then at the other end, you've got Mina Shirakawa, who, when she's done with Stardom, she is going to be a highly sought after like person wherever she decides she wants to go. Like, she's so poised and ready that if AEW offered her a contract full time, great. If WWE said, here's a bunch of money, we want you to join Damage Control right now and just be in that group, you're ready to go. I could believe she could join it the next day and fit in seamlessly. That's how good I thought she was, like, in this match, like Western television wrestling ready. And I really like this match, and I thought the presentation of Stardom, the presentation of the women, everything about it, it hit, and I was just really happy with it.
I think might have been Tony's best stuff since the NXT UK stuff she did with Rhea Ripley.
Oh, yeah.
They had a couple of really strong matches back then, too.
I haven't seen this level of passion from her. Like,
She's enjoying this. I think everybody involved in this angle really enjoyed doing it. So,
I think so.
Before that, boy, Owen Hart tournament quarterfinal, Shingo Takagi and Brian Danielson. So this was the one that couldn't miss. There seems to be one of these at every Forbidden Door. It's the shut up and take my money match, as far as I'm concerned. The match that you're just aching to see. And we got Shingo and Danielson here. Again, it's the Owen Hart tournament. So we kind of knew who was going to win. We just kind of wanted to see how they got there. And they did a lot of chain wrestling at first, with Danielson getting most of it. Brian, I thought this was brilliant, caught his foot on the rope on a tope suicida. And Shingo caught him and went right into a draping DDT and went right to work on his neck. And Brian sold the idea of the pinched nerve really, really well. And that was very smooth from a couple of pros there to work their way through that one. And it became the type of New Japan match that I hope, with big moves, near falls, almost wins, struggles for the ropes on submission holds, all of that. Shingo hit Made in Japan for two. He even kicked out of the Psycho Knee, only a two count on the Psycho Knee. And then toward the end, we got stomps, a triangle, elbows from Danielson. Shingo tried to power him up, but couldn't quite get out of it, and ended up back on the mat in the arm bar for a tap out. This was just a hell of a good match between two of the best workers out there right now. They worked well together. Danielson, again, just knows how to work every style in the world. He's living his best life this year, getting all of his dream matches, and we get the benefit of it. Shingo Takagi and Brian Danielson, you could do this every week. I'll watch it every single time happily.
I don't know if we're ever going to get this match again, but for
maybe not
moments that we got, this was resplendent. I guess that's the best way I can put it. I think what really made this match for me was Shingo the heel. Okay. Ooh. We don't get a whole lot of Shingo Takagi as a heel in New Japan Pro Wrestling. You know, we get babyface Shingo, you know, it's time, the stack, all of these kind of things. And him being just a shitty heel, you know, like cursing off the crowd, trying to do the yes chant himself of like, this is what we need in New Japan. Like, that was my takeaway from this, is like, we need top level heel Shingo Takagi just being a mean bastard. And that will actually drive sales, in all honesty. Like, that's how strongly I felt about like the presentation of Shingo. I feel like it's been something that, you know, kind of missing in New Japan, to be honest. It made the match for me, and it just made me realize that we need a stronger Japanese-based heel that's fresh in that promotion that is not evil.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. I mean, it's something that the War Dogs right now are a top heel faction. The House of Torture has kind of been decimated, and they're kind of just seen as kind of an annoyance more than a serious threat. And New Japan could use somebody that's just flat out on the heel side, that's just a nasty bastard. And he did a good job.
Yeah. That was my takeaway. That was the big one. It's like, you could talk about to the end of the earth that this was a good match. That is not a hot take in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Was this match good? Yes. Should you watch it? Yes. Let's move on.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Before that, we had a trios match. This was the Young Bucks and Kazuchika Okada teaming up to face, Scissor Ace? Hiroshi Tanahashi and the Acclaimed. So we came out to perhaps Max Caster's worst rap, but you know, I'm not here to...
Well, he managed to finish a rap.
So middle-aged white guy shouldn't be judging anybody's raps, to be fair, but...
He finished the rap on his own. So by default, it's not his worst rap.
Fair enough. So we had that. And then basically once the match started, it just was building to Tanahashi tagging in against Okada. So there was wrestling between the Bucks and the Acclaimed, and then one guy would come in and come out, but they kept us away from much between Okada and Tanahashi, to the point that they even were squaring off, and then Okada said, "Nah, forget it," and tagged out to one of the Bucks. So they kept teasing this kind of this jerk Okada that won't get in the ring with Tanahashi. But then the others wrestled long enough that they were the only two left, and the tag was coming, and they kind of squared off in the middle of the ring, and we got a little bit of Tanahashi and Okada. Unfortunately, what we didn't get was a good knee day from Hiroshi Tanahashi, who was struggling to run and jump. But the Bucks managed to delay Tanahashi's high fly flow because he had Okada on the mat and ready for the big splash there, the frog splash. But The Bucks delayed him. And once he did jump, Okada was able to get the knees up. And then he just hit Tanahashi with the Rainmaker and beat him. And the president of New Japan does the job and gets helped out by Billy Gunn, who has to save Hiroshi Tanahashi. I'm going to say that again just to make sure you hear. Hiroshi Tanahashi, one of the greatest wrestlers of this century, and maybe in Japanese history among them, was saved by Billy Gunn and was helped out and consoled by Billy Gunn. So you couldn't pin Max Caster here? Like we had to have Tanahashi and then have him beat
you and I both knew that when Hiroshi Tanahashi was put in this match, there was a reason Hiroshi Tanahashi was put in this match. And it's because there were very few other people in New Japan who were going to be willing to eat a pin from Okada in this match.
If we're able to get Okada back in a really, really good match at Dynasty, then we can talk, I guess. But yes, yes. That's possible.
That should be Kiyomiya, honestly. That should be where you do the Kiyomiya match finally.
Noah is not on the letterhead.
I know, I know. Here's
Lady B is just like, can't wait to see Billy Gunn versus Okada on Wednesday.
You speaking into existence, it probably will happen. I'm not.
I can wait. I can wait as long as you need to for that
matter. So
I'm happy to wait a lot longer. You can do it in 5 years.
I put this out into the universe, and I was kind of chewing on this earlier. If you are a Western wrestling fan that's joined in the last 5 years, and you don't know much about New Japan Pro Wrestling, you watch WWE and AEW, you know, you're trying to learn more, and you've heard about this amazing rivalry between Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kazuchika Okada that has spanned the last 14 years. And this is your first exposure to their rivalry with each other. Are you enthusiastic or driven to seek out any more based off of what you saw here tonight? Or do you just feel like, what was it that about this? Because I feel like they squeezed enough blood from the stone from this feud and from Tanahashi that it's hard to see what the magic was one time.
Yeah, well, Tanahashi's body is shot. Dead. I mean, it's just destroyed. And it looks like Naito is hurting too. So I do wonder if some of these people that haven't really seen a whole lot of it show up to this arena, maybe for Swerve versus Ospreay, and are sitting there just like, okay, here are these New Japan guys. And it's like Tanahashi and Naito aren't moving very well. And you just think, boy, this is New Japan. And like, well, not all of it, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But right now, again, it's just this little thing where, you know, they want to get Suzuki, who's not even in New Japan anymore. They want to get Tanahashi. They want to get Ishii and all these guys. And like, oh, those guys are kind of beat to hell, and they're in their 40s. You know, it's not – there are other people in New Japan, but, we saw some of them.
It played to another thing that they did tonight where the people that they did have on the show, right? You know, you got your Naito. You got your Zack Sabre Jr. You had your Yota Tsuji. And theoretically, you were supposed to have Shota Umino, but it didn't work out because, you know, he got hurt. He was supposed to be in that ladder match.
Right.
Those were the four. And theoretically, those were a big four in New Japan that you were exposed to at Forbidden Door that were probably going to have a pretty prominent position both at Wrestle Kingdom and at the Dynasty show the next day. Yeah. So you're putting them in the big position and de-emphasizing Tanahashi, which is the right thing to do. But I do think that it was kind of smart on the programming side for AEW and New Japan to make sure that at some way, shape, or form that they were trying to make sure that these guys got a little bit of feature time.
Fair enough. They did get a very good look at Shingo Takagi, and I think a lot of people there realized how talented he was if you hadn't seen him before. And Zach looked good against Orange, so it wasn't an empty cupboard.
Shingo Takagi is the other guy that I should have mentioned, absolutely.
Yeah, that's just a couple of guys there that I was just like, oh boy. But yeah. Before that, the pay-per-view portion of the program anyway, there was also some pretty good pre-show matches.
The easiest prediction in the world.
Yeah, well, sure. MJF against Hechicero here, which was entertaining, but the whole point of this is last time MJF was in Long Island, he lost the world title to Samoa Joe. He was hurt. He took a whole bunch of months off. This is nothing more than a rehab start for him, so to speak. This is a way for him to come out, back in Long Island, get a win, get the crowd going with a big babyface thing at the beginning of the pay-per-view, because MJF's always going to be a babyface in New York City. And this is, and of course, he's from Long Island. This is even more specific than that. And it worked. I mean, they loved him. He did his shtick. Hechicero's a good wrestler. It was a perfectly fine match. It did exactly what it's supposed to do, which was get the crowd hot, get them excited, give them something they liked, an MJF win. It served exactly what the purpose was. And by the way, the second match did too. I mentioned that the whole point of this thing, and not the whole point of that match, I didn't mention, was you got to get the Elite over. This whole thing of building the Elite. The Elite had to win that match, and they did. And it's all to build those guys up. So whenever the hero comes, they have the proper mountain to climb. And that was why Okada did need to win that match. And it was the right decision there. I just, you know, could have been one of the Acclaim. But this one did exactly what it was supposed to do. Warm up the crowd. Big win for MJF. Send him home happy. And then you can bring him in where he's looking at the monitor at the main event. You can tease the home crowd. Hey, our guy's going all the way back up to the top. It's, you know, I think this accomplished the mission.
Spock, pantomime, you know, smoke and mirrors. They didn't work particularly hard in this match, nor did they feel like they needed to.
Did not need
this,
to.
You know, that Rush and MJF match was probably supposed to be on this pay-per-view, and this was supposed to be the match that they were heating it up with. They flipped it the other way around, and I feel like everyone but Hechicero kind of looked past it in a lot of ways. This reminded me a lot of MJF and Tanahashi last year at Forbidden Door, where it was just kind of like I use the word contractually obligated for some of the New Japan guys. MJF is the AEW version of the contractually obligated talent that is showing up for this card. You know, he was already looking past for Beach Break and all the, and showing up in Memphis for an AEW show on Dynamite the other day. I would like it if MJF was as committed to the company when the company needs him to be committed, rather than being committed when it's best for MJF to be committed as a top star. I noticed that about him, and it's fine. It's whatever. I'm not in love with MJF personally as a performer or as a person. But I can't say that when he comes out to the ring, he doesn't deliver, and he at least puts on entertaining matches. This was not the main event with Bryan Danielson or Samoa Joe or anything like that. But it wasn't Naito either, if that makes any sense. You know, he was, it wasn't a night off, but he wasn't on his A game. But I think Hechicero has been working very, very hard to make the most of every opportunity that he has, and I respect him for that.
We had some previous show matches. This is the one that inspired a Rocky Romero tweet to make sure everyone knows the Pentacero MA and Fenix are only contraction to AEW. That's the only company with an A in it that they're contracted to. So they can team with Místico. Nobody needs to panic. Nobody in Mexico City needs to panic. Again, the only A is the one in front of an E and a W. There aren't two more A's here. No siree, Bobski. They are not involved with those people whatsoever. So we can have this match, right? Yes. Okay, good. So we did get this one. This was a lot of fun. So you got Místico and the Lucha Brothers, which is kind of a, not hell freezing over, but it's unusual to see these guys in the same side or even in the same ring with each other. And the crowd was aware of it. Like, the crowd knew how interesting this is, that you're getting the Lucha Brothers. Now, for a while, Penta was in CMLL. There was a whole thing several years ago where the talent in CMLL went to the front office and just said, we need some fresh people in here. We need some freshness. And they brought in like the original, you know, like La Parca and LA Park, and they brought in Penta and things for a short run. And it went about as well as you would imagine it would. But so it lasted about a month and it was fun, but there it was. I haven't seen him since. And here they did team up against Yota Tsuji, Titan, of course, CMLL guy who knows exactly how to work this style, and Hiromu Takahashi. Now, Tsuji and Hiromu spent either the vast majority of or a part of their excursions in Mexico. Everyone knew how to do lucha here. Yeah. And this was a really fun match between six guys that just know how to work. At the beginning of the match, I thought, oh, Tsuji looks like he wants to be somewhere else. And he mostly just kind of sold for Penta early and looked a little bit like he didn't want to be there. But once this match got rolling downhill, it went well. And what I mean by rolling downhill is just get a little momentum. Once the spot started going, everybody stretched their legs a little bit, started running the ropes, started hitting a couple of small dives to lead to the bigger stuff. And then it really picked up. Then LIJ got a roll, and it was Místico that mostly sold. No one was really a heel much in this one, but Místico is such a babyface that it always turns out that he's the good guy, so to speak. Titán hit a really good tornado DDT gourd buster super kick combo that looked fantastic. It got a "This is awesome" chant, the first one of the night there. Místico ended up getting his armbar submission on Titán, just like everybody figured that would be the way that this one would go. And it served a function. Again, another warm-up match that got everybody into it, and you saw people from different organizations teaming with, wrestling each other. It was in the spirit of Forbidden Door, and it was a nice appetizer before the pay-per-view started.
It's one of those matches that, while purely academic, could be a shitload of fun. There was like, it was completely by the numbers lucha style match, right? Penta and Phoenix did their Penta and Phoenix shit, and their springboards and the jump onto the shoulders and doing the splash. Yota Tsuji, I really, really enjoyed in this match. I thought Titán went a mile a minute and really sped up that side of the LAJ faction against the other three, who were just going nuts with the speed, But Hiromu's characteristic throughout the build of finding out the new wrestling Místico, bringing the Místico mask down, and then just being happy that he got to wrestle Místico the entire time until he put Místico into a powerbomb onto the ring apron and then went right up to the camera and said, "Místico, go bye-bye." And that was basically the end of the subplot of the entire thing.
Well, remember, they had worked most of the week in Mexico. Hiromu spent a week in Mexico and worked him in Arena Mexico. So they had already had one of those.
It was just so much fun because, Hiromu has that charisma. But what AEW television hasn't really been able to do is convey how insane Hiromu Takahashi is on New Japan Pro Wrestling. And I felt like from the Collision backstage vignette when he found out he was wrestling Místico toward the opportunity he had to own the camera during this match, I was absolutely delighted. And of all the matches that I was like, oh yeah, I am super excited for this match when I'm watching it today, this is the one that when it was announced on Thursday all the way to today, I was like, yeah, I really want to make sure I don't miss this match.
Lady B has an interesting point that I want to get to. She says, I'm assuming it. I do wonder if Omega got the "We Want Roman" chant. I wonder if he gets it. If there's more of Jack Perry stealing his moveset. So, now we're getting, after years of everybody hating Roman Reigns, we're getting "We Want Roman."
I think they want to grease the wheels to that. Like,
sure they do. Yeah, and Okada being called the best bout machine, the Bucks blurring him from company history. So I don't know if you've seen the little video vignettes and the video packages that the Bucks supposedly have made on their own, different than the other ones. They blur out Omega. I think they're absolutely trying to build the anticipation for him to be the ultimate hero when he comes back. Sure. Yeah. I think that's all pointing toward that. I think it's going to work like a charm, by the way. It's going to work perfectly.
Lady B might be missing one person in that equation, and there might be a fifth to that elite, and that could be Hangman Page, and he might have the world title on him.
Could very well be.
Have titles because they are the elite.
Yes. And there's plenty of titles in AEW to go around, and all of wrestling, really. Everybody's got all kinds of titles.
If you want a trio, you can hold 9 titles just by being the trio champion.
That's true. And that's not a knock on AEW. Just about every company in wrestling right now has a bunch of belts laying around. Mariah May versus Saraya. This is the Owen Hart tournament match. We mentioned it a little bit earlier because Mariah needed to be on a roll for that match with Shirakawa and Tony Storm. So Indeed, she sold a lot of this one for Saraya, but she got in some offense, ended up hitting a nice little roll up with the bridge to win. Didn't have a ton of time, but it got a little bit. It was not like, I don't think it was like 2 or 3 minutes. I felt like it was longer than that. It was fine. It makes sense for Mariah to win. Like I said, going into the whole thing with Tony and Mina, and you know, Saraya has her outcast thing with Harley Cameron and going. So there was a little bit of subtext as Tony Storm used to be in that group. Perfectly
it went
fine
8.5 minutes.
8.5. See, there you go. And it didn't drag a bit. Mariah did well. Saraya did well. We had a decent women's match there on the pre-show, and it got the point across that Mina and Tony was important, and that Mariah is a player in this tournament, which is exactly the story they should tell.
They managed to get me to bite on the pinfall attempt, which Mariah was right by the ring rope, and she grabbed the rope with her hand. They got me with that one. But other than that, like, this was, you know, I could see why this would be on a Dynamite. This didn't need to be on this show, but because of the escalation of the stuff going on with Mina Shirakawa and Tony Storm and all that stuff, it made a lot of sense to just move the story forward, even though they could have wrapped up some of these Owen Hart matches like they're doing on Dynamite.
It's a little awkward, though, if you have a men's Owen Hart match and then not a women's Owen Hart.
No, absolutely. And at the other aspect that I'm thinking about it is, like, you want this match on the pay-per-view or the 0 hour. If this woman is going to be on a pay-per-view, your biggest one in 2 months for a big title, you're better off putting her in a match of some consequence here on this pay-per-view, and there's nothing of more consequence than the Forbidden Door. As I'm thinking this through, you know, it's like, you start one line of thinking, you're like, oh, wait, no, actually, I kind of like this other way better.
There was a tag team match before that one. Chris Statlander teamed up with Momo Watanabe on the heel side. And I tell you, that Momo Watanabe, I just can't get over what she did to poor Queen's Quest. And they took on Willow Nightingale and Tam Nakano. And this match was fine. It was a little clunky at times, though, because we had some different styles, and it took a little while for everybody to find their rhythm. But Willow and Momo had a really nice run toward the end against one another. Made me hope maybe we'll get more Willow Nightingale versus Momo Watanabe in there. It picked up late. Tam Nakano's an excellent worker. And Statlander did what she could, hung in with them. And Tam pinned Momo with a straitjacket German with the bridge. So that might have some consequence in Stardom. But either way, nice little match right here. I enjoyed it. Again, there were a couple of moments when not everybody was thinking the same thing at the same time, but not bad. And it went well. And the rest of it went well. And the finish went real well.
The crowd was quiet for like... Well,
they're also just still filling in at that point.
Right. Just hear me out here. The crowd was quiet for the first 4 minutes of this match. And then there came a moment where Tam gave Chris Statlander this incredibly crisp, incredibly high-angle German suplex towards like one of the corners of the ring. And the crowd just kind of... Oh, you know, just kind of like stiffened up a little bit. I'm like, oh, that was good. And it was just kind of like from there, everybody, like, they were looking at Momo and they were looking at Tam and they were like kind of feeling it out, you know, like, who are these wrestlers, that kind of thing. Like, they knew who Willow was and they were into it and all this stuff. But it wasn't until she started hitting those crisp German suplexes in the middle of the match that this thing kind of like turned a corner and everyone got really into this match. And by the end of this match, I thought they won the crowd over pretty well.
Tam has a toughness that belies the kawaii, which is the Japanese concept for cute. Basically, it's not just a word for word. Kawaii means cute, but it's that whole kind of cute culture, the Hello Kitty thing, the whole. So Tam's persona is, you know, the kawaii of the cosmos, cutest in the cosmos, and she comes from, you know, the idol culture in Japan. So there's the, you know, they do the whole choreographed dances and stuff like that before their matches, but. So she kind of comes off like she's a performer and outside of
a little more adolescent of a wrestler than like
wrestling. But I mean, they, like, she and her tag team partner put out EPs of them singing and stuff like that. But Then she gets in the ring and she will knock the living snot out of people. I mean, like, she has some of the stiffer matches and some of the stiffer matches in style. Like, she and Julia always knock the taste out of each other's mouth big time. She and Micah hit each other pretty hard. Like, Tam hits hard when she hits, and her stuff is crisp. So it did come across there. Yeah, I think it does surprise some people when they say, oh, we're going to see somebody doing kind of shtick here, and instead, like, oh no, she's stiff, she works stiff, she hits hard. So I think it's usually a moment of surprise in Tam's matches when you haven't necessarily seen her a lot.
So looking forward to more Willow and Chris Statlander out of this. I was honestly a little surprised that Willow and Tam side won, because I feel like they've been trying to get the Chris Statlander gets one up over Willow frequently, but pleasantly surprised, and I really enjoyed it.
Lady B says, I had no idea who the other two ladies were, and by the end I forgot Chris was in the match. Chris, you know, that it's Chris has a ways to go to catch up with them, but not that Chris is bad, just it's Stardom's a fast league. Tam is great, and these ladies are very different than Riho, in my opinion. Yeah, they are. Stardom's a little bit different, higher level than a lot of the stuff that Riho's done. Riho's worked for Stardom, I think, in the past, but it is a different style. It's a different style.
I kind of feel like Riho has lost a little something in the last couple of years because of the, I don't know what it was, but she showed up on, I believe, Collision last night and did a face-off with Serena Deeb. And she didn't feel like the hot commodity that she was in the first couple of years of AEW as the champion and all that. And I don't know what it was. But when I saw Tam and Mina and Momo Watanabe, there was an electricity about the way that they were coming off on the screen. And yes, they were wrestling, and Riho was just coming down in clothes and doing a face-off. But it felt different.
Right. Before this one, we had a four-way tag match, and this was Malakai Black and Brody King, Private Party, Gabe Kidd and Roderick Strong, and kind of an odd couple team. They're not getting along. Kyle O'Reilly and Tomohiro Ishii is the surprise there. And Strong, like I said, Strong and Kidd kind of argued with each other as much as they wrestled together. Ishii hit a brainbuster on Brody that didn't quite get all the way over and looked pretty scary, but Brody was fine. And this is one of those matches. It's tough when most of the crowd isn't even there yet. And the people that are coming in are filtering in, finding their seats, getting their popcorn and their drinks and stuff. But so these guys did what they could, but this isn't a match that's going to stick too much. This was strictly to kind of fill a little bit of time on the 0 hour.
I have so many things to say about this match. I was fascinated by this match. Absolutely.
I will get out of your way.
Oh man. Okay. First off, if you look at Gabe Kidd and Roderick Strong, you know what I see? I see Gabe Kidd and the guy that most closely matches Alex Coughlin that you could plug and play into a War Dog position in Roderick Strong.
Oh, boy.
Like, they basically got the guy that was most closest to his former War Dog partner and said, you know what? You'll do. Let's get you. And I can honestly kind of see it, and it kind of worked for me. And, you know,
I don't think Roderick Strong joined the War Dogs.
Oh, I don't think so. But if you're going to use them for a couple of weeks and you're going to do one night, you're better off if you're not going to go full in on the War Dogs gimmick, which it clearly wasn't, and are just kicking the tires to see what Gabe Kidd was going to be like. This is what you do with it, and it totally worked out. If you watch the Ishii aspect of this whole thing, Ishii took one bump in this entire match. You know, he was a house of fire, or he just got out of the ring and got out of the way. And it was so much so that the House of Black ended up staying out of the way until they actually had to do a spot. And then I don't know why they thought they were going to be able to pull this one off, but Ishii tried to give Brody King a suplex with the assist of a Kyle O'Reilly super kick, and they didn't clear it, and Brody King almost died.
Yeah, it was pretty ugly looking.
And I think everybody kind of knew at that moment, it's like, we can't go that route again. Brody King looked a little shaken up. Everything seemed to be okay when all was said and done. But she wasn't looking great on this one. And then the big takeaway for me was that, my God, they were really trying to get Private Party over. And they were actually trying to get Private Party over to a point where I thought it was interesting that they got a better reaction, arguably, than the Acclaimed got in their match with the Hiroshi Tanahashi versus the Elite. Like, the reaction the Private Party got, if you go back and rewatch it, they got a more genuine, like, we like you guys and we're into it, rather than all the work that the Acclaimed they had to put in order to get that act over and get the reactions they wanted a couple matches later. I thought that was fascinating, and I think paying attention to the reaction that Private Party gets in the next few months is something that we should all be paying attention to.
So we're about to wrap this one up here. The opener was Kyle Fletcher in a very quick match with Serpentico. It was almost a squash, really. There wasn't a whole lot to that one, just a quick win for Kyle right there.
Why did that happen? Was it so that people recognized Kyle at the end of the show when he showed up to see Will?
The only thing I can think of, I mean, this thing was, how was it 3 minutes?
It was 3 minutes, 10 seconds, completely unnecessary. I was like, we were at 14 matches, and then I think Jeff Jarrett is sitting at the pre-show, and he's like, yeah, we got 15 matches tonight. I look at Dave, I'm like, 15 fucking what? And he's like, could be a mistake. He's like, no, he's on the writing team. He's like, we have 15. And then the next thing you see is Kyle Fletcher and Serpentico. You're just like, why is this match happening? And then you think about Fletcher and Ospreay. You're like, maybe it has something to do with the main event. And it did, but it didn't matter. Fletcher didn't need to be out there at the end of the night. This match didn't need to happen. It was cool. Fletcher looked dynamic. He beat somebody after getting his ass handed to him by Mark Briscoe and Atlantis Jr. in CMLL this past weekend and losing his Ring of Honor television title. But other than that, let's rehabilitate him by beating Serpentico.
He was in the locker room. He had his gear.
Sam said Brody. TK said Brody King is okay, which is good to know. I was thinking, Steven, what is next for all of these promotions that were here tonight? Like, what is if you were interested in what New Japan has coming up, what's the next thing for them? If you're interested in Stardom, what's going on with them? And what's going on with CML? Do you know offhand?
Stardom has a live show on 4th of July. That's a coincidence. There's no Independence Day in Japan, but their next one is 4th of July. They just had a big show, at Corken Hall, and then they had a pay-per-view thing there, the Conversion, it was called, where one of the factions was dissolved. They had all the big title matches. So they're building up to the next one. Next step is July 4th. New Japan is kind of bumpering that one. So that's in Corken Hall on the 4th. New Japan is working Corken Hall on the 5th and the 3rd. So the next show for New Japan is on July 3rd. I'm losing my voice a little. Excuse me.
Take a breath.
I got it. At Corken Hall on the 3rd. And that is part of the tournament that will determine the final entrance for the G1 Climax. So two blocks in the G1, that 10th spot in the A block, 10th spot in the B block, up for grabs. And the next rounds of that tournament will be Wednesday and on, on Friday. And, Lady B, thank you so much. Wow, that's very cool. Really appreciate that. Got a super chat there from Lady B. Thank you.
I have to find the preview for AEW Dynamite before, if I'm going to accept the super chat. So I got to AEW Dynamite preview.
Okay. So go ahead and find that. So that's what's going on in Japan anyways, that the stars will be heading back there. And on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, there are shows there as New Japan works its way toward the G1 Climax tournament and Stardom works its way toward its next pay-per-view. So some things coming into
focus. I will say, I do think that there is a very real possibility that Daniel Garcia beat Will Ospreay for the international title.
You think so?
I do. I think that there is enough meat on the bone between MJF and Will Ospreay going into that match that I could see a title change. And frankly speaking, it's more up in the air who wins the match between Ospreay and MJF at Wembley, if that's happening, if there's no title on the line.
Okay. And Sam from Power Bombshells, again, make sure you check them out. Their show every week here on the Fight Game Media YouTube channel. She said Serpentico just came back from surgery a few days ago. So that's great that he's back and looked fine in the match. Just wasn't a very long match right there. So, yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, Daniel Garcia, of course, they had him up there in the rafters, in the good seats up in the boxes, watching the match. And he is, you know what we forgot to mention here, Jeremy, real quick. After the Mercedes Moné match, Britt Baker stuck her head out for the first time in months and didn't square off with Mercedes. She didn't come to the ring, just stayed out there on the stage. And Moné held up her titles, and I guess that's what's next for Mercedes Moné. So I would imagine that we'll be seeing that build up over the next few months, Mercedes Moné and a returning Britt Baker. I haven't seen Britt in a very long time, so
there you go. I am completely failing on finding any information on the AEW Dynamite. Lady B, if you show up on Thursday for our show, yes, we are doing a show on July 4th. Because we are crazy and New Japan doesn't care about the 4th of July. So we will be back to talk about who is the next round of the play-in tournament for the G1. And yeah, I don't know of any other matches other than, you know, Ospreay and Daniel Garcia. Lady B, do you know any of the Dynamite matches?
Well, I was just wondering, what are the post pay-per-view predictions for Dynamite? Yeah, I think we'll probably see something. My guess is Britt Baker is going to be a big part of it, just from what we're seeing out here. We'll get the Daniel Garcia Ospreay match. I would imagine the MJF is going to have something to say about what is next for him. And I'd imagine that would go, at least he's going to try to move in the direction of the world title. Maybe somebody could detour him out of that. What's that?
I found it.
You found it. Great. Let's hear it.
We got Will Ospreay versus Daniel Garcia, which we just talked about. Jeff Jarrett versus the wild card in the Owen Hart Cup tournament. So, you think it's going to be Hangman? I think it's going to be Hangman.
And Hangman Page makes the most sense.
Nightingale and Chris Statlander in an Owen Hart Cup tournament. Based off of the match tonight, I'm going to go with Chris Statlander.
Okay.
And then Pac versus Bryan Danielson.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, Pac got the winner of the Danielson Shingo match. So nothing wrong with that. That'll be another banger, I bet.
I'm going to take a wild flailing shot in the dark guess and say that I think Danielson might squeak out this one. Lady B, it's all good. We had to fill this out to 90 minutes anyways, and we're glad that we were able to find some way to do it.
Yeah, and then, of course, all the CML All-Stars be heading back to Mexico. They don't have to be there until Friday. That's when their big show is, Friday Night Arena Mexico. They might be on Dynamite. You might see some of the guys there. That'll be.
I'll be seeing them in a couple of weeks at Fantastica Mania, a couple blocks from my house.
Yeah, we'll be previewing that on Speaking of Strong Style as the date gets closer. Yeah, so yeah, Pac versus Danielson, Chris versus Willow, and I'm going to bet that Britt Baker DMD shows up, and hopefully Tony Schiavone will have his voice back. Poor Tony, I hope he gets well, and he can be up there with Britt, because they're that just seems they go together like peanut butter and jelly.
I look forward to our next live show, which could potentially be after I was sitting in a high school gym watching Luchadors. It's possible.
Yeah, fantastic.
But it'll be a Fantastica either way. We're Speaking Strong Style. Stephen and Conway and I thank you very much for joining us tonight for our AEW crossover show. We usually cover New Japan Pro Wrestling, and this is the Kevin Ely, the Boom Beat, but he is out of town this week, so we stepped in because it seemed kind of good for the New Japan Pro Wrestling beat to, you know, talk a little bit AEW and meet some of you fine folks, which we decided to do. But yeah, you can join us normally every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern, and we also have a dedicated audio feed that you can find on Spotify and most audio podcast catchers like Apple. Just look for Speaking of Strong Style. And Steven, do you have anything that you want to add to all of this?
No, I think that's about it. I just look forward to seeing what happens more with the G1 Climax Tournament. And this is set up for some interesting stuff in AEW. So I'll be watching Dynamite too. There's a lot of good stuff to watch. Like we mentioned it before, that right now CMLL has been pretty good. The last few Dynamites have been very strong. WWE's been pretty good. We just need to get New Japan going a little bit here, but we still love New Japan, even when they disappoint us sometimes. But you know, the thing is, Jeremy, we're spoiled for choice. This is a really wonderful time to be a wrestling fan. Stardom is terrific. Marigold, the new promotion, is really good. If you're a wrestling fan, you're just spoiled for choice. There's so much talent. There's a lot of good wrestling out there. It makes it a really fun time to be a fan for me.
New Japan is trending on the right path. The G1 is going to be fantastic, and I am really looking forward to going through it all over again with you, my friend Stephen Conway. So let's tell people we'll see him on Thursday and see him on Thursday.
All right. Thanks to everybody who took their time to watch us or listen to us. We definitely appreciate your time, and we will talk to you again real soon.
Prime Day is coming July 16th and 17th with epic deals exclusively for Prime members. You'll feel like you just won an award.
Oh, wow, I didn't even prepare a speech. I'd like to thank my family for always needing stuff. Also, Sam, my delivery guy, for bringing all my awesome deals so fast. You're the man, Sam!
Shop deals on electronics, home, and more this Prime Day, July 16th and 17th.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.